Your official home for the Cincinnati Bengals, ESPN 1530.
This is the Bet Rivers Sportsbook Tony and Mo Football Show, live from Twin Peaks in Westchester. Brought to you in part by Encore Technologies. Visit Encore.tech, Miami Valley Gaming. Get ready to get lucky at Miami Valley Gaming. Stone Statements. Bring your dream kitchen to life. StoneStatements.com. Nixco Plumbing. Don't go to the average Joe. Call Nixco. Superior Honda. SuperiorHondaStore.com. Simply Superior. Hard Rock Casino. Get in the game. First State Bank. You're at home with us. Life Center. Changing lives through organ and tissue donation. R&L Carriers. Your global transportation provider. Visit RLC.com today. And by Bet Rivers, your hometown sportsbook. Visit BetRivers.com. This is Cincinnati's ESPN 1530, the official home of the Bengals.
Good afternoon. It's the Tony and Mo Football Show, the Bet Rivers Sportsbook. Tony and Mo Football Show from Twin Peaks in Westchester on ESPN 1530. We are posted up here every single Monday during the football season. If you don't know where Twin Peaks is, if you're in the north part of town, it's very easy to get to, right off I-75. Get to the Union Center Boulevard exit, and you're good to go. You get off the exit, you can have a cold beer in your hand within maybe 90 seconds, and that might be pushing it.
You're a West Sider, and you found your way.
Found it very easy, yes.
Yeah.
As a former Sharonvillian,
yeah.
Is that correct?
Yeah.
I am very familiar with this
current
area.
Current Sharonvillian here.
There was no Twin Peaks when I lived in Sharonville, and I wish there would have been, but nonetheless, as a current West Sider.
Yeah.
Very easy to get to, and we hope to have you out. Maybe not today, but perhaps at some point this season. We've got Monday Night Football tonight, and I actually think a pretty good game this evening. Rams and Bears, good place to watch it tonight. Obviously, lots of sports this week with the World Series, college football, the Big Ten is back. UC is going to play on Saturday. You can't go to the game against Memphis, so good place to watch it here if you're making plans for Saturday afternoon. We will get to the Bearcats coming up this hour after their emphatic 29-point win over SMU coming up in about 40 minutes. But come on out, Twin Peaks in Westchester. The tone of today's show, at least as it pertains to the Bengals, should be about Joe Burrow.
Yes.
It should be about how, again, with less than 5 minutes to go, Joe Burrow goes down the field, 10 plays, 75 yards, and puts his team in a position to win. We should be talking about how the offense functioned fine. It was a shootout. You and I talked before the first Bengals-Browns game about hopefully this Burrow-Baker thing has legs and they have a series of, you know, sort of big-time rivalry games against each other. Yesterday lived up to the hype. Joe Burrow held up his end of the bargain on a day in which his offensive line was total patchwork. He doesn't have Joe Mixon. That's what we should be focusing on today. That should reflect the tone of the show. So you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to make that the tone of the first segment. I'm going to make that the tone of the first segment.
Who says we're negative?
Yes. Well, we're going to talk a lot about Lou Anarumo, and we have to spend a lot of time on Carlos Dunlap because I think Carlos Dunlap wants us to. But I want to talk about Joe Burrow yesterday.
Yep.
And with it, the game plan that Joe Burrow was operating, because I thought both were really, really good.
Yeah, that walking away from that game, I thought Zach Taylor had his best game as a play caller. That's not saying as a head coach.
Right, agreed.
As a play caller,
absolutely.
Offensively, that was better for Zach Taylor. The motions, the shifts, the play to Giovanni Bernard late in the game on the fourth and one, or on the fourth and one there on the goal line. All of that aside, Joe Burrow to me steals everything. And you mentioned with the O line, you mentioned no Joe Mixon. How about the pressure as a rookie when you know that you have to score almost every time you get the ball?
Mm-hmm.
Like that's a lot of added pressure on Joe Burrow. And you walk away from yesterday, 35 of 47 for 406. He gets a bad ball tipped on the first drive. He has the fumble. Outside of that, when you watch him, it's not just the accuracy. It's the level in which he throws the pass.
Uh-huh.
You know, is it a level one? Is it a level two? How many times yesterday did he recognize a blitz and change the play himself or get the ball out quick? I mean, he's evolving every single week. He's had one bad week in his NFL career. And that was against the Baltimore Ravens, who are going to do that to a lot of rookie quarterbacks.
Mm-hmm.
And then you look at, okay, this is Joe Burrow's first time around seeing someone twice. He threw the ball 61 times against the Browns the first time. Yesterday, he was better. That tells me that he improves game to game as a starter, especially against a team. You just – you hate that he's going to get pushed into this category, because we talk about Zach Taylor's record. When we talk about Zach Taylor's record in one possession games, Joe Burrow is now getting lumped into that, and he shouldn't, because he's the reason that this team has a chance to win all these games, and yet the defense can't hold on at the end. But again, not wowed from Joe Burrow because he's a rookie. Wowed at Joe Burrow as a quarterback on the landscape of all quarterbacks in the NFL. He's holding his own right there at the top.
Well, and I think what I liked more than maybe anything is at the end of this week, where it felt like the majority of the conversations were about the turmoil surrounding this team. And by the way, maybe that's coming to a head with the Carlos Dunlap situation. He starts the game by throwing a pick in the end zone,
yeah,
which we'll talk about. And he almost threw one, should have thrown one early in the third quarter, but the mistakes weren't compounded. He moved on from them. You didn't feel like he's made an early mistake. He's blown a scoring opportunity. It's going to snowball into something else. And late in the game, he didn't look like a rookie, man.
Yep.
And it's not the first time we've said that. In a couple of positions this year, go back to the first game against the Chargers. Joe Burrow was a pass interference call away or a missed field goal away from dominating the conversation about that game. How rookie quarterback in his first game goes down the field, puts his team in a position to win, or at least sends him to overtime. And we don't talk about it that much because they lose the football game. Same thing yesterday. You are getting everything and more that we were hoping for from Joe Burrow before the season. And it is frustrating as hell that it's not translating into wins in the short term. But I walked out of Paul Brown Stadium yesterday, yes, disappointed with the loss. Yes, frustrated as hell with the defense. Yes, convinced that they have to go find somebody else to call plays on that side of the ball. But more than anything, 4:53 to go. It's been the end of a hard week. He's not going to have Joe Mixon. Offensive line is a mismatch of dudes. Yeah. And the guy delivered again. Like, that is, say what you want about, you know, what it's like to be a Bengals fan and how they invent new ways to lose and how you never have any hope. There at least is something to cling to at the most important position.
Yeah, you're not trying to rebuild a team and wonder who's going to be the quarterback. Mm-hmm. You already have your answer. The crazy thing for me is that watching across the landscape of the NFL, the teams that have the elite quarterback play are the ones that are going to be in contention. Seattle. No one talks about how awful their defense is.
I think we are today, but you're right.
But they have Russell Wilson as the
right.
answer.
Correct.
The Chiefs have Patrick Mahomes. The Ravens have Lamar Jackson. You go down the list.
Mm-hmm.
The Bengals have that. And Damian Woody, he wrote on Twitter yesterday, he said, you know, Joe Burrow is going to be a problem when the Bengals surround him with the right pieces. And what I take away from that is, that just doesn't mean player pieces. That means organizational pieces. That means coaching pieces. Because if you're a member of that front office, how can you not be meeting today after watching that yesterday and say, what can we do? Whether that be from now until the trade deadline, from now until the end of the year, what can we do as an organization to make sure we don't mess this up?
Right.
That's what Joe Burrow is Joe Burrow. Only you can mess this situation up by not doing it properly around him. He's on a rookie deal. There are pieces around that you can start with. You have to be sitting down as an organization at the top and say, how can we not fail? How can we not let this happen to what's happened so many times for Cincinnati Bengals teams? Joe Burrow's the guy. We know that. Now what is the question for me?
Yeah, they have the most important piece taken care of. And over the last decade or so, I'm not sure you could always say that. Even Andy at his best, and we all like and respect Andy Dalton, but even Andy at his best, there was always this, I'm not sure. You know, I used to always joke, people make a face before they talk about Andy Dalton.
Yep.
And when you have to make a face before you answer the question, you've given me the answer to the question. With Joe Burrow, nobody has to make a face.
Yep.
They've got the guy. But we always use it a lot, the word urgency. Now, this amplifies the urgency. You have to figure out a way to win while you have him under a rookie contract.
Mm-hmm.
You have to figure out a way to take advantage of having this kind of talent at the most important position. And you're being very fair if you're skeptical if they are.
The Andy Dalton situation, it was always, he's a good quarterback, but then you go back to, but can he put the team on his back?
No.
And that was the
can
answer.
Can he elevate? No.
What you just mentioned, No Joe Mixon yesterday.
No running game to
speak of. The defense was awful.
Mm-hmm.
The offensive line was patchwork. And no offense, that's not A.J. Green in his prime. Tyler Boyd is solid, but he's making T. Higgins look like a veteran.
Yeah.
Michael Thomas, he's putting the ball on the money. Like, he's, again, he's doing things to elevate everyone around him. And as good as Andy Dalton was, Andy Dalton had to have the right pieces around him. Joe Burrow is not only elevating the offense, he's giving the defense a chance to win games. Like, as a defense yesterday, with a minute and six on the clock and no timeouts, you had to get one stop. And I know we'll talk about the defense all day,
yeah,
but that is because Joe Burrow put you in that situation. After the offensive line tried to prohibit that, false starts, mm-hmm, holding, the penalties in inopportune times, and yet, as you mentioned, this team finds a way, and that's the difference of Joe Burrow, though, because Joe Burrow is going to sit back and watch, and he'll say all the right things,
mm-hmm,
but he said he wants to win a championship. People talk about his stats. He said, the only thing that matters to me is a win or a loss.
Right.
Okay, do something so that you win with Joe Burrow, because you don't want to turn him off of the Cincinnati Bengals. You want to show Joe Burrow, I don't care if that's signing Quentin Spain this week, even if you don't think that's going to be an option for you going forward, do something to show Joe Burrow, like, look, we understand what you're doing. We're going to do all we can to help you.
I want to talk about two things offensively in the fourth quarter, one of which you can relate to, but let me start with this. They run the fourth and one play where they throw the ball to Giovanni Bernard. It works. It's a great play call. Touchdown. You go ahead. Cleveland's not going to have any timeouts. There is the part of me,
mm-hmm,
that wishes Gio would have gotten the first down and not scored.
Yes.
Now, I think in that situation, I'm not sure I trust the entire operation to go ahead and get points. Atlanta's dealing with this with the
completely
top early
different
score. Completely different situation. But in an ideal world, I said this at the game with a buddy of mine, in an ideal world, you pick up the first down, you run some more clock. I'm not blaming Giovanni Bernard,
yeah,
or Joe Burrow or Zach Taylor. But, yes, ideally, you know, you,
right,
you score, you bleed some more time.
And the ball was low. I'm like, just catch it and go down.
Catch it and go down.
Yeah.
And then you at least can run one more play. And in that situation, Cleveland's going to get it back with, you know, 30, 40 seconds less. And it's a heck of a lot harder for them to go down and at least score a touchdown.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this, because you were in a position yesterday. You've been in this spot where, you know, Cleveland scored every time they touched the football in the second half. And if you don't count the one kneel down at the end of
gosh,
of the first half, they scored every time they touched the football over their last six possessions. When you were a senior at UC, at the end of the year,
mm-hmm,
the defense wasn't stopping anybody.
Right.
I'll never forget Brian Kelly at halftime of the Pitt game saying, look, our defense is what it is. There were times that year where it felt like, I think of the UConn game,
yeah,
that you guys won 45-44, where it's like, okay, Tony and the offense are going to have to go down and score every single time they have the ball because our defense isn't stopping anybody. What is that like for a quarterback? What is that like for an offense?
It's added pressure, because I always equated it to, with high school football in Cincinnati, playing Cole Rain,
mm-hmm,
because you knew you were only going to get a certain amount of possessions.
Right.
Because of their style of play, and that's kind of how you had to operate with what the defense was. Yes, you knew at times they were going to be there to make a play or come up with a turnover, but you weren't counting on it.
Like, yeah,
your mindset was, we have to score every possession. And I mean, to the Bengals' credit, the first team since the Super Bowl era to score 33 without punting and lose.
Yeah,
I mean, that's you're talking about reinventing ways to lose.
Does Kevin Huber get a game check?
Yes, and he still does. But it's an added pressure, and that's why I mentioned with what Joe Burrow is doing, it's even more impressive,
mm-hmm,
because there is added pressure already from the inability of Lou Anarumo to figure out what in the world is going on the defensive side of the ball. And the only thing I'll say about the fourth down call at the end, if Cleveland has timeouts left, you're like, okay, we need to make them burn timeouts.
Yeah.
The problems on the offensive line would have scared me, because mm-hmm, you are a false start.
Yeah.
Or something away,
correct,
from now going first and goal from,
yeah,
the six. And,
yeah,
and then it gets a little dicey. But
I'm not saying Gio should have taken,
right,
a dive. I'm not saying they should have, you know, designed a play to get the first down and keep the clock,
yeah,
going. With the way it worked out, the benefit of hindsight would say, yes, ideally,
yeah,
you get the first down, you let the clock run, and then you score on the next play. Obviously, that doesn't involve a false start. It doesn't involve any number of things that can go wrong. I certainly believe 10 times out of 10 in that situation, I want the guy to score a touchdown.
It's a minute and six with no timeouts
Correct.
In the NFL.
And your defense, if you're good enough, ought to be able to get a stop. And on an afternoon where they don't have Odell Beckham Jr. because he got hurt, he's done for the season, on a day in which they made stars out of guys
Austin
that you typically
Hooper didn't play.
Yeah,
Jarvis Landry had
you're getting
bad
Donovan
ribs.
Donovan Peoples Jones and Harrison Bryant looking like Pro Bowl players. It's not a criticism. It is a hey. In hindsight, boy, it would have been nice had Gio gone to the ground,
100%.
And now you can run a play. But I don't think he or anybody else erred in what they did in that situation. You want to score a touchdown, but knowing how the game turned out. Yeah, I would have liked to have had another 30, 35 seconds off the clock.
I know that everything is going to be said the right way. Mm-hmm. When Joe Burrow gets back to his place last night, you have to just think, like, what do I have to do?
Yeah.
Like, we did this behind a bad offensive line with no Joe Mixon, and yet there we were with a chance to win again, and we didn't. Like, when does self-doubt – and I don't think it does with Joe Burrow because he's not that type of player. When does self-doubt come over a team that's like, you know, we're just – Because the realness of the situation is they're going to get punched in the mouth this weekend against the Tennessee Titans. Mm-hmm. And they'll probably get punched in the mouth out of the bye against the Pittsburgh Steelers. How much fight will this team have left when they've lost so many games like this and it's so frustrating and it wears down that, you know, if Tennessee comes in next week and it's 14-0 and Derrick Henry's, you know, just running down your throat, how much fight is there when you have so much frustration built over?
I don't know what Joe Burrow did when he got back to his place last night. I will tell you at 4:05 what he should have done when he got to work this morning.
Can we also get his parents some better seats? He's the number one overall pick. Do they have to sit out in the weather? Is there a booth or a box that's not being utilized?
I shouldn't have better seats than Joe Burrow's parents.
Correct.
I'll tell you what Joe Burrow should have done this morning coming up at 4:05. But first, we've got to talk about Lou Anarumo and a defense that couldn't stop anybody. We'll do that when we come back. I'm Mo Egger. He's Tony Pike. We're here till 6 o'clock. It's the Bet River Sportsbook Tony and Mo Football Show. We are here every single Monday, Twin Peaks in Westchester on ESPN 1530, Cincinnati Sports Station. Zach Taylor is speaking as we speak. We'll have that for you a little bit later on. An update on some of the injuries. Jonah Williams being called day-to-day by Cincinnati's head coach with that neck injury that took him out of yesterday's game. Trey Hopkins is in the NFL's concussion protocol. Joe Mixon still being labeled day-to-day with that foot injury that kept him out of action yesterday. And Bobby Hart, who played well yesterday, at least according to Pro Football Focus, injured his knee late in the game. He is already being ruled out for Sunday when the Bengals host the Tennessee Titans. Bobby Hart was the Bengals' highest graded offensive player yesterday.
Yep.
On a day in which they played well as a unit offensively.
Who was the highest graded defensive player?
Marcus Hunt. You talk about things I didn't think I would be saying 2 weeks ago. Much less before the season started, Marcus Hunt was, primarily on the strength of his play against the run, he only played 21 snaps.
That's a lot of snaps on this defense.
I think there were only the Browns did not run a ton of plays. They ran 52 for the game.
Yeah.
So he played about a 40% of the snaps. But, yes, Marcus Hunt got a 72.3 grade from Pro Football Focus,
that's
highest on the team.
That's an efficient 52 snaps that the Browns put out there. When you take into account that Baker Mayfield was 0-for-5 in the first quarter.
Yeah, they had 7 third downs the whole game. They got 23 first downs. This is a good launching off point for us to talk about the defense. They had 23 first downs for the game, not to mention, obviously, plays they scored touchdowns on. They reached third down 7 times. They were 5-for-7 on third down. They weren't even getting to third down yesterday.
Yeah, that's fun.
The pass rush was non-existent. I mean, non-existent. Early in the game, late in the game, non-existent no matter what they did. The secondary without William Jackson III was terrible. I know Darius Phillips made a really nice play in the ball that he picked off earlier in the game, but I don't know what he was doing late. I don't know what he was doing on the play that won the game for Cleveland. Can you? You know?
He's being put on an island for some reason, which, again, last time I checked, this isn't Revis Island that we have here. Like, last time I checked, you need to give these guys some help. I understand as a coach you're trying to put guys in position, but you got to play the numbers. You got to play the odds, and one-on-one with the game on the line is not the odds that I'm looking for. They don't make it hard on anybody.
No.
Like last week, Philip Rivers, one of the most immobile quarterbacks in NFL history, looked like Philip Rivers in his prime, coming off a terrible game against Cleveland.
Yeah.
Baker Mayfield got pulled from the game last week against the Pittsburgh Steelers. Banged up, rib injury, not healed yet. How many times was he sacked yesterday?
Zero.
Zero times.
He was barely hit.
You got to a guy zero times that is banged up. They did nothing to make and you're one or two hits away early in that game from putting Baker out.
Mm-hmm.
Mentally, he just didn't look like he was there early. And yet, much like against Philip Rivers, you let quarterbacks get comfortable.
Tony, I sit about 15 rows up from the Cleveland sideline,
mm-hmm.
from the visitor sideline, not too far away from where you and I sat for a game last year. They've tarped up our normal seat, so I sit right behind the Cleveland sideline. The first 12 minutes of that game, Baker Mayfield's body language
awful.
Was terrible.
Yep.
I literally watched him when Cleveland was on defense, in between, you know, actual plays. He's not talking to anybody.
Right.
An assistant coach comes over at one point and hands him the iPad thing, the Surface, whatever they call that thing. He literally takes it and puts it right down.
Right.
He's not talking to his receivers. He's not talking to Case Keenum. Nobody.
Right.
And I said almost the exact same thing. Go up two scores on this team, and that guy will quit.
Yeah.
And
you
instead.
Had a chance. And he had just lost Odell Beckham.
Yeah. And instead he completes 22 passes to end the game.
Yeah.
Staggering.
I mean, they stopped him on that one where he spiked it.
That was a
the
good
defense
stop.
Defense looked good on that
good
play.
Job.
They had lined
yeah.
up well.
Yeah.
Look, for much of the first quarter and the first half, I was wondering why Cleveland wasn't running the ball more.
Mm-hmm.
Because it felt like they were gashing the Bengals up front. Look, I know that Kevin Stefanski has helped out Baker Mayfield, and the play-action game helps out a ton. You have to, at some point, put fear in a quarterback's eyes. You have to, whether that's leading up to the game or during the game, you have to do something to make him feel uncomfortable. The Ravens did that to Joe Burrow.
Mm-hmm.
That's the game Joe Burrow didn't look good at all. Outside of that, what has this Bengals defense done that strikes fear in an opponent?
So I remember years ago having a conversation off air with Paul Gunther when he was the defensive coordinator, and we were talking about Vontaze Burfict. We all at different points have been critical of Vontaze Burfict, but he said to me, and I'm paraphrasing him here, look, I know that on Monday and Tuesday, the other team's coaching staff is designing a game plan around number 55
mm-hmm.
Threatening to blow up everything they're trying to do. Say what you want about him. That guy is in the offensive coordinator's head on Monday night and Tuesday night as they're getting ready to mm-hmm. give the game plan to the players. There's nobody on this team who does that. Now,
no.
we can throw a lot of shade at Lou Anarumo, and we will.
Yes.
But I'm looking for, as you just pointed out, I'm looking for, it ain't Von Bell. That guy couldn't cover you. Darius Phillips, LaShawn Sims have been badly exposed in recent weeks. I got Jermaine Pratt, who I thought was going to be an impact player, falling down trying to cover Kareem Hunt. Nobody making any plays on the defensive line. Nobody putting any pressure on Baker Mayfield. And then after what you just mentioned about the way they played against Indianapolis, I'm looking for, if you're game planning against the Bengals, who is the guy that you're going, look, that dude's not going to screw us up.
Right.
Either we have to block him, or we're not going to throw towards him, or we're going to keep this guy away from destroying everything we're trying to do. There's nobody on the field for them who does that.
Well, the Vontaze Burfict piece, that's because as a linebacker, you can affect the game in multiple ways.
Mm-hmm.
The running game, sacks, coverage. Like, if William Jackson's the best defender, you can scheme around a good corner, right? I'll just throw the other way.
Right.
I'll flood the other way. I'll do something. Even Jesse Bates, as good as Jesse Bates is, he's limited because he's the last line of the defense.
Right.
You need someone in that front seven that's going to set the tone for you. And say what you want about Vontaze Burfict. He was a tone setter. They have no one from an attitude standpoint. I mean, that's a lineman that I played for, like on the offensive side, I wanted a guy that every now and then is going to get a 15-yard penalty. Because they're setting a tone, or they're blocking after the whistle. Who on the Bengals defense do you sit there like, man, I'm worried about that guy.
Mm-hmm.
I need to worry about this guy coming off the – like, think of what defenses do, and I know it's a huge disparity. Think of what defenses do for Aaron Donald. Think what they do for even an Ndamukong Suh.
Right. You have to game plan around those
guys.
Like,
you have to, because they're dominant up front. Mm-hmm. So you have to game plan the run game. You have to game plan your play, your protections, your play action pass. They have no one on the Bengals side. And then to compound things, I think schematically they're terrible. And they don't play in the biggest moments that they need to.
Right.
Oh, they were good against the Chargers. Okay. How about when you needed a stop at the end of the game?
Not good.
Did you give it up?
Yep.
Okay. How about the Eagles, who were decimated? Just get a stop before the half. Could they?
No.
No.
So get a stop.
Every
they
called, big moment.
Call timeout to let Greg Ward run down the sideline.
Every big moment.
Get a stop.
The first round against Cleveland. You cut it to a one-score game. One time, go get a stop.
Right.
They run it right down your throat.
Right.
The defenses, look, defense are going to have bad games, but they step up in certain times. The Bengals have none of that. They have no identity on defense. They have no attitude. They have no style of play that's going to lead you to believe that things are going to change. And I hate to tell you this, but the Pittsburgh Steelers yesterday, they stopped Derrick Henry because they were physical with Derrick Henry. Do you think that there's physicality on this defensive side that Tennessee's turning on the film today? Like, oh, boy.
No.
We're in trouble.
No.
No, you're not fearful of anyone. Like, Derrick Henry will get 40 carries this week.
Pittsburgh held him to 75 yards. He never really made it. It helped that they played from way behind. Mm-hmm. Tennessee did and almost came back and tied the game, if not for a missed field goal. But you're right. Stay on that because I want to talk specifically about Lou Anarumo when we come back. And you talked about nastiness. You mentioned Vontaze Burfict. I thought about Vontaze Burfict when I watched the hit that Andy Dalton took yesterday in the Dallas-Washington game. We'll spend some time on that. And the seventh-ranked UC Bearcats go on the road. You talk about a team I don't want Lou Anarumo near, that defense, because those guys are good. And you do have to game plan around a bunch of those guys.
In the hierarchy of coaches in Cincinnati, where is Zach Taylor?
Keenan Singleton tweeted on Saturday night that Luke Fickell is the best football coach in Cincinnati,
mm-hmm.
and that Marcus Freeman is the second best football coach in Cincinnati.
Steve Speck
could be. I mean, then you wonder which high school coach do you slide in the number three spot.
Right.
And then how many high school football coaches do we list before we get to Zach Taylor?
Great question.
And then how many grade school football coaches do we start listing before we get to Lou Anarumo?
I'm already working on my next plan. I need Sean McVay and Brian Kelly to write a strong-worded letter about me being an offensive genius. It doesn't matter what I've done in my past. I'll get a job.
Okay. I don't want you to do that, though. 22 away from 4 o'clock.
I'll still do this show.
He's Tony Pike. That'd be good. I'm Mo Egger. This is the Bet River Sportsbook Tony and Mo football show from Twin Peaks in Westchester on ESPN 1530 Cincinnati Sports Station. Bobby Hart already ruled out for Sunday with a knee injury. Joe Mixon listed as day-to-day. Trey Hopkins in the NFL's concussion protocol. Sports headlines, a service of Kelsey Chevrolet, home of lifetime powertrain protection and guaranteed credit approval from their family to yours for life. Go to KelseyChev.com. Sports Rivers, or Bet River Sportsbook, Tony and Mo football show from Twin Peaks in Westchester. A couple of other things really quickly. Monday Night Football, Chicago in L.A. to take on the Rams. That game will air live on Fox Sports 1360, UC's Desmond Ridder named the American Athletic Conference's Offensive Player of the Week after a 305 total yards performance and a 29-point win over SMU. UC announced today there will be no fans at the remaining three home games at Nippert Stadium, including the game this Saturday against Temple. The Bearcats up to number seven in both major polls. Ohio State third after beating Nebraska on Saturday afternoon. And Indiana enters the top 25 after their thrilling overtime upset win over Penn State. They're 17th in the AP top 25, 19th in the coaches poll. Should the two-point conversion have counted?
Yeah, and I don't even care if it was in or not. You can't. Penn State lost that game anyway.
James Franklin needs a director of common sense.
Yes.
I don't want to live in Happy Valley.
Nope.
I talked to a Penn State fan yesterday before the game who was, the morning after, still livid.
Ooh.
Livid.
They should be, because that was that.
Take a knee, my man.
Yeah, that's a top. You're supposed to be a top 10 team in the country. Yikes.
Anyway, good
for the Bearcats.
Yeah, good for the Bearcats. They leapfrog Penn State. Also, I saw this today from Adam Schefter that no suspension is expected for John Bostic of the Washington football team, who concussed and knocked out of the game Andy Dalton yesterday.
Terrible.
As blatantly a cheap shot as I've seen. I'm sorry, and I know I'm to a degree jaded by Roger Goodell's just arbitrary lack of heavy-handedness in some cases, and the way he's overly officious with his punishments. I just made up a word. He's inconsistent.
Weird.
He's inconsistent with his punishments. But how John Bostic in this day and age concusses Andy Dalton, knocks him out, blatant helmet to helmet, and doesn't get a
suspension.
One of
the worst hits you can see.
It's one of the most vicious that I've seen.
And we're supposed to be player safety, and we're supposed to be concussions and stuff like that. Not only that, and I know it's been talked about now, but right after that, the fact that no coach, no offensive lineman, nobody for the Dallas Cowboys tried to kill John Bostic, like that says enough about where the Cowboys are right now.
Yeah, Mike McCarthy was asked about that after the game. I saw a tweet today that referenced the Andrew Whitworth game against the Raiders in 2012 when he started a brawl after a cheap shot on his
quarterback. That game was already over.
Yeah. And he started a brawl sticking up for his guy. The fact that no Cowboy got in that dude's face. I mean, look, I didn't have an issue with the Vontaze Burfict suspension for what he got on Antonio Brown. That hit yesterday was just as vicious, just as blatant. But it went up. It occurred against a backup quarterback.
Right.
It occurred against the guy who's not a star in the league. If that's Patrick Mahomes.
Oh.
If that's Russell Wilson.
Done.
Done. I'll say it. If that's Joe Burrow. Old boy gets more than just whatever fine he's got coming his way.
Yep.
That was ridiculous. All right. From a personnel standpoint, we've said the Bengals don't have anybody who, if you're an offensive coordinator, you fear. Nobody you're trying to game plan around. So that's a personnel issue. But you also referenced the scheme. The scheme's terrible. That's a coordinator issue. By the way, Zach Taylor kind of doubled down today in his press conference on Lou Anarumo.
Yeah,
and we'll hear that a little bit later on.
Just going down with the ship.
It's easy for a fan to say when his team doesn't give up or gives up a game-ending scoring drive, 37 points, and the other team scores every time they touch the football in the second half, it's easy to point the finger at the defensive coordinator. How much should we be pointing the finger at Lou Anarumo?
A lot. Look, it's not just about points you give. It's when you give the points up. And as I mentioned before, they give up points when the team needs them most. Get one stop. Make one play. One time yesterday on the last drive, pressure Baker Mayfield and win the game. Sack, anything. He's going to force the ball. They don't make plays in big-time moments. If you watch Pittsburgh yesterday, every play they're jumping around, they're moving around, the energy is up. This team plays with no energy. And then schematically, look, you can wonder why they couldn't sack Phillip Rivers and you can wonder why they can't sack Baker Mayfield. At some point, if you're not getting it done with a four-man rush, you got to get creative. You got to find ways to get to the opposing quarterback because I don't care who you are. If you're a quarterback in the NFL and you have all day to sit and you're not worried about who's going to rush you or who's going to hit you, you're going to light this defense up. And that's what teams have been able to do. And I go to the last series yesterday because the mindset of a defensive coordinator in the NFL and in game-specific time, 106, zero timeouts left for Cleveland. You have not hit Baker Mayfield all day. You have a chance early in that drive to get a sack. You whiff on it based on a four-man rush. So your last two plays, you decide to bring a pressure from the secondary that has no chance of getting to Baker Mayfield in time, and you give up a one-on-one catch down the field. Okay, you know what? Let's take a timeout. Let's regroup. Let's go about this. And we've seen this before, right before the Philadelphia Eagles halftime. Come out of a timeout. You make a terrible play. You don't get the job done. On the 24-yard line with 16 seconds left in the NFL, you're down three. You're up three. You're conceding a field goal attempt. Okay, Joe Burrow, we're going to go into overtime and win it in overtime. The only thing that will get us beat is to give up a touchdown in 16 seconds. One, maybe two shots at the end zone. And if you watched Kyler Murray last night, they took a shot late in the game.
Yeah.
At the end zone. It wasn't there.
They shouldn't have, by the way.
Yes, it wasn't there, and he threw it 10 yards out of bounds.
Should have put his kicker in a better spot to make a field
goal,
but yes, I
get
your point.
But you're taking the shot, and if it's not there, you put it out of bounds, and you live to see another day. You're not trying to fit into a small window. So all you had to do was show defense back, and Baker Mayfield's either going to check it down, and they get out of bounds, or he throws it out of the end zone, and they try a field goal. Instead, you allow an opportunity. And you could say that Phillips needs to make the play. You can say that it's a good ball placement, whatever. I don't want to risk in a one-on-one situation with the game on the line. Just play it safe.
I got to get a break in here, but I do want to spend some more time on Lou Anarumo, because to me, I keep coming back. I keep coming back to one thing and one number, and I'll tell you what that is coming up in the 4 o'clock hour, 9 minutes away from 6 o'clock. I'll also run past you what I think Joe Burrow should be doing today. Today. Mm. We'll do that coming up at 4:05. I want to spend, usually, it's really not by design, but we run through everything that happened with the Bengals, and then kind of at the end, we do some college football. I think that Cincinnati win over SMU deserves more treatment, better treatment than that, so I want to spend some time on them coming up in the 4 o'clock hour as well. It is 8 minutes away from 4. We are here at Twin Peaks in Westchester. It's the Bet River Sportsbook Tony and Mo Football Show, here till 6 every single Monday on ESPN 1530 Cincinnati Sports Station.
This is the Bet Rivers Sportsbook Tony and Mo Football Show, live from Twin Peaks in Westchester. Brought to you in part by Encore Technologies. Visit Encore.tech, Miami Valley Gaming. Get ready to get lucky at Miami Valley Gaming. Stone Statements. Bring your dream kitchen to life. StoneStatements.com. Nixco Plumbing. Don't go to the average Joe. Call Nixco. Superior Honda. SuperiorHondaStore.com. Simply Superior. Hard Rock Casino. Get in the game. First State Bank. You're at home with us. Life Center. Changing lives through organ and tissue donation. R&L Carriers. Your global transportation provider. Visit RLC.com today. And by Bet Rivers, your hometown sportsbook. Visit BetRivers.com. This is Cincinnati's ESPN 1530, the official home of the Bengals.
It's the Bet River Sportsbook Tony and Mo Football Show. We're at Twin Peaks in Westchester every single Monday. We're posted up from 3 until 6 o'clock. We've got cold beers. You can have one, not either of the two that are on our table. Get one of your own, but you can't unless you get here. Easy to get to I-75, Union Center Boulevard exit, and you're going to be good to go. We are wall-to-wall, obviously, Bengals and Browns, and we'll get to the Bearcat game on Saturday night as well. Plus, the first half of Zach Taylor's press conference, which we can't wait for. It's going to be awesome.
Contractually obligated
Zach Taylor press conference. Let me finish up on Lou Anarumo, and then we'll get to what I think Joe Burrow should be doing today. Lou Anarumo was hired by the Bengals on February 21st, 2019. Mm-hmm. That's more than 7 weeks after the Bengals decided to move on from Marvin Lewis. More than 7 weeks after they decided to go in a different direction with their coaching staff, they hired their defensive coordinator. Now, obviously, in the interim, they also hired their head coach. Zach Taylor was hired on February the 4th. 17 days after they hired a head coach, they hired a defensive coordinator. Mm-hmm. Now, we had talked a lot about the merits of Jack Del Rio because he fit kind of the prototype of what Sean McVay had in Los Angeles.
Wade Phillips,
experienced, great defensive coordinator who had extensive head coaching experience. Jack Del Rio did not come to Cincinnati. Lou Anarumo was not the first choice. I'm going to guess, given the fact that he was hired 17 days after Zach Taylor was named head coach, that he was not the second choice or the third choice. Hell, I'm not sure he was the top five choice to be the team's defensive coordinator. I think maybe we're seeing why that's the case now.
If that's the case, then why the loyalty?
Was this a
top 20 defense last year?
No.
They were awful.
Yeah.
And if he wasn't your first choice, you're just going to bring him back for year two? And now this team is where we're at, and you find yourself in the same predicament. Like, what is going to constitute for the organization to say, you know what, whether it's Zach Taylor, whether it's Lou Anarumo, you know what, we got this one wrong. But we're not going to let it keep snowballing. Let's get out in front of it. Let's change it now. At some point, that's got to happen.
I don't disagree. But, I mean,
Can you count on Lou Anarumo's defense to get a stop this coming Sunday if you need it?
Absolutely not.
Right.
There's a reason why this guy was available.
It's a simple answer,
though. There's a reason why this guy, in mid-February, when coaching staffs are put together, and again, the Bengals got off to a late start because Zach Taylor couldn't be officially hired until after the Super Bowl that year. I understand all that. There's a reason why in the last week of February, there's Lou Anarumo open for a gig.
Yeah, I'll take it.
A defensive coordinator gig. There's a reason why. And I think we're finding out
why. Why don't we just extend him? Bring him back for year 3, 4, 5.
Meanwhile, the Bengals are dealing with the growing problem that is Carlos Dunlap. Carlos Dunlap's weekend involved an Instagram post on Saturday in which he posted a picture of the whiteboard, which illustrated what the rotations were going to be at that position. That's typically the kind of proprietary information that a coaching staff does not want revealed.
Mm-hmm.
After the game yesterday, in a tweet that he has since deleted, he tweeted about selling his house.
Yeah.
He was seen by the TV cameras yesterday going after defensive line coach Nick Eason. Paul Danner Jr. has written a pretty good summary and analysis of the Carlos Dunlap mess right now. He mentions that Carlos has been late for meetings. He's talked about the fact that he has multiple times thrown his coaching staff under the bus on Zoom calls with the media. So we'll get to the Carlos Dunlap piece of this. This is a marriage that needs to end.
Why is he on the team still?
And so, to me, if I'm Joe Burrow, this is my team, right? Face of the franchise?
Yep.
Should Zach Taylor cut him? Of course he should. Should Mike Brown fire him? Of course he should. Should the Blackburn family and the Brown family get together and move on from Carlos Dunlap? Of course they should. This dude should not be at Paul Brown Stadium on Wednesday when the Bengals players return to work. But okay, if Joe Burrow is the leader of this team, to me, the next step in that evolution is, hey, this is not a guy that I want to play with. This is not a guy on board with what we're doing. This is not a guy whose goals are commensurate to ours. This is not a guy who's on board with my head coach.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's interesting. Burrow yesterday went out of his way to say, look, Taylor's the guy. I think it's interesting that Joe Mixon chimed in on the tweet yesterday saying, look, I'll take the house. I'll buy mm-hmm. the crib. Tyler Boyd called him out as well. But the face of the franchise is Joe Burrow. Mike Brown absolutely should take control here and say, we're not doing this anymore. And he should back his head coach. And to me, if I'm Zach Taylor and I'm trying to build this winning culture that he never shuts up about.
Culture
and a guy who clearly doesn't want to be here, those two things don't fit. But if I'm the face of the franchise and the leader of the football team, I'm going to take the bull by the horns. I'm going to go in. If I've got to go into Mike Brown's office, if I've got to get all the coaches together, if I've got to get everybody in the organization together to say, look, this is not a guy I and we want to play with. Let's move on. I want Joe Burrow to do that.
Yeah.
It shouldn't have to come to that, but I want him
right.
to do that.
That's the point. It shouldn't be at that situation.
Correct.
It should already be taken care of. Look, Giovanni Bernard, Tyler Boyd, AJ should not be answering questions in the postgame about Carlos Dunlap.
No.
Like that. That's stuff you imagine in high school football, or not even that sometimes. Like, be an adult, handle things the right way. But here's where I draw the line. I don't let Carlos Dunlap hold me hostage.
No.
I don't just give him what he wants.
No.
Because by tweeting a picture of a whiteboard, you could suspend him for that.
That's conduct detrimental
yes.
to the team.
So, okay, you know what? You want to be a pain here? Now you're suspended.
Mm-hmm.
You're not around the team. You're certainly not active in the game.
Correct.
But yet he comes back out and he plays. So, again, what Carlos Dunlap wants is just, hey, cut me. You'll have to pay me and then I can go somewhere else. I'm not doing that. I would find the worst trade partner I possibly can. I honestly would. I'd call like the New York Jets and be like, hey, give me a late seventh rounder for Carlos Dunlap. And at this point, he's not serviceable. He's going to have an attitude about everything. And if you're going to tweet something like that, stand by it.
So – I understand that point. I really do. You're not going to give in to a malcontent. I understand. But this team's got enough problems. Cordy Glenn tried to do it last year, and I do think it's worth mentioning that this is back-to-back years in which a fully vested veteran player has openly challenged the authority of Zach Taylor. And look, I understood Carlos's initial gripe about communication.
Mm-hmm.
And, look, this is a player who has meant a lot to this team. He's done a lot of really good things. I even called him a high-character guy on Twitter, and I stand by all that. I understood his frustration. Okay, fine. You know what? You did something in frustration. Now you're just bringing attention to yourself. And to me, look, say what you want about some of the guys on that team. They lose a heartbreaking game yesterday.
Correct.
A heartbreaking game yesterday in which a number of guys in that team played their asses off.
And it was, pay attention to me.
30 minutes after the game ends, it's, hey, look at me. I need attention.
Mm-hmm.
I am not concerned about the whole winning culture thing. I don't care anymore. I don't want to hear the word anymore, but it is what Zach Taylor is trying to do.
keeping Carlos Dunlap around does not help that at all. It hurts it.
It doesn't go. It doesn't match what the messages that we're sending.
Correct. So do you want to give in to a malcontent? No. But do you want the malcontent here?
No. So suspend him.
Whatever it is.
Until you can find someone to trade him with, suspend him.
I don't know that anybody's going to want Carlos. I don't think you're going to find a trade partner.
You don't – Seattle Seahawks, who are terrible, wouldn't give up a seventh-round pick?
Maybe.
Cleveland.
Maybe.
Send him to the division.
I would do I don't want him here. He doesn't want to be here. He's not helping the team now. I wonder financially his cap number this year was just under $11 million, so half the season's gone. So can you pick up $5.5 million? And he is under contract for 2021. So here you have a player who's not good anymore, who's 31 years old, who's still making a lot of money. I think you're going to have a hard time finding trade partners, and he's being a pain in the ass right now.
Yeah.
So I think you're going to have a hard time finding trade partners. Whatever involves Carlos not being on this team anymore, fine, whatever it is. I think if you suspend him, he's still technically here. He's still somebody you're having to answer questions about. I want to rid myself of the problem. And if that involves eating some money, if it involves giving into a malcontent for the sake of the greater good, the guys who are on the right page, the guys who are invested in winning, for the sake of having this season truly be about Zach Taylor's silly winning culture, move on from the cancer.
Right.
Carlos Dunlap is a team cancer right now.
Yep, time to move on. It's very simple. Again, I don't know, as we sit here at 4:13, why he's still on the team or he's not suspended. There's been nothing except, well, we're going to handle it internally.
And the person with the ultimate authority here is Mike Brown. I put less on Mike Brown usually than others do. And maybe he's not as hands-on as he used to be because of his age. He's got people beneath him. He's got family members, Duke Tobin. To me, I'm Mike Brown and I want to give Zach Taylor the best possible opportunity to build what he's trying to build, Carlos Dunlap is the antithesis of that.
Has anyone seen pictures of the house? Is it nice?
I bet you it's pretty
nice. Is it a nice house?
Bet you it's a pretty
nice house. Because last night I tweeted out that I'm putting mine on the market too.
Your house?
Yeah. It has adequate square footage, bathrooms. Mm-hmm. I'm willing to negotiate with IOUs.
Okay.
I went 0-4 in fantasy yesterday.
Oh, wow.
And I don't want to make it about that.
I understand. I thought it was an indictment against me.
No. I'll just put my house up, too.
If you're – I mean, first of all, grow up.
Thank you.
Not you. Carlos, grow up. This is the type of stuff that high school kids do, subtweeting, make it about me. Grow up.
Yeah.
You're not a kid in the league anymore. You've been in this league for a long time. You know what it's like. You know what it's supposed to be like to be a pro.
And it sucks because he's done good in the community.
He's done a lot of good in the community. He's been
good for women. He's done stuff for bullying. He's been on this anti-bullying campaign, and he's trying to bully the Bengals now.
Yeah, the two things can be mutually exclusive. I respect and appreciate all that stuff. That's wonderful. We've had Carlos Dunlap on our show to talk about those things. But specifically as it pertains to his relationship with a team that has a certain goal in mind, if you're not on board, then there's no reason for you to be here, especially if you're not a productive player anymore.
You're 1-5-1.
We're talking about a rotational player who's barely playing.
1-5-1.
We're making a big deal about a guy whose best seasons are behind him. This is easy to do, and to me, this is on Mike. Now, maybe Duke Tobin can go to Mike and go, hey, we're going to move on from Carlos, and Mike says, yeah, go ahead. Or Zach Taylor does that, and Mike says, yeah, go ahead. To me, if I'm Mike Brown, I'm getting out in front of this. I'm going to give everybody in that locker room a chance. I'm going to give Zach Taylor a chance. I'm just going to do it myself. There's no reason for you to be here anymore.
Yep. Goodbye.
See ya.
And then from that, then you start the discussion of trade deadline and where you go from there.
By the way, you know, it was mentioned to me a week and a half ago, well, maybe this will light a fuse underneath Carlos Dunlap. Okay, we talked a lot about A.J. Green's demeanor and body language and maybe what he said or didn't say after the Baltimore game. What has A.J. Green done since the Baltimore game?
Produced.
Played well, right?
Yep.
Now, if you're the Bengals and you're looking at possible trade opportunities, I don't think there's a team that can afford A.J. Green, who's still due more than $10 million between now and the end of the year. But okay. Now, if I'm Green Bay, if I'm Seattle, if I'm one of the teams that was interested in a wide receiver or maybe Antonio Brown and didn't get him, all right, fine. I've seen him play for a couple of weeks. I feel better about him. A.J. Green has, over the last two games, let his play do the talking for him. Carlos Dunlap had a chance to do that. Instead, we're Instagramming like we're 14 years old. We're tweeting like we're 19 years old. Grow up.
Yep.
If the guy's not on board, move on.
Simple. That's what we need to do now. Move on from Carlos Dunlap.
17 minutes
after
4 o'clock.
Taken up too much of this show.
It has taken up too much of this show. All right. Let's get to a couple of pieces on defense. And a guy who didn't play yesterday, We're going to do that. But first, UC goes on the road against SMU, and Desmond Ridder and Mike Denbrock answer what Luke Fickell was looking for.
Mm.
We'll do that next. He's Tony Pike. I'm Mo Egger. It's the Bet River Sportsbook, Tony and Mo Football Show from Twin Peaks in Westchester on ESPN 1530, Cincinnati Sports Station.
RDI Corporation presents Football in the Natty, brought to you in part by Papa John's Pizza on ESPN 1530, the official home of the Bengals.
Sitting here watching rugby here at Twin Peaks in Westchester. It's the Bet River Sportsbook, Tony and Mo Football Show.
I got here today at like 2:15.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been watching since, and I still don't understand it. Sometimes they kick, sometimes they throw, sometimes they roll it.
What I don't understand is...
The one guy just kicked the ball out of bounds.
What I don't understand is why, like this dude right here, if he runs the ball, he runs right into two guys.
Right. Like, but then they don't have to give the ball up.
Yeah, but every time I look up and there's a ball carrier in this game, they're running straight into two dudes. Like this here, I'm just going to run into this guy.
I could be a play-by-play rugby announcer.
We could do it right now. In fact, if rugby's on every Monday afternoon, by the time we get to December, still talking about the Bengals, maybe that would be more entertaining.
Yeah.
It's a 6-6, the score of the game. We're watching Lee versus Cass. I don't know who that is.
The clock's counting up.
Okay. Well, that happens in soccer.
Yeah.
The game has pretty much taken place on one side of the field.
Yep.
We'll say that,
yep.
Which is interesting. Anyway, 25 minutes after 4 o'clock, a sport that I understand a whole heck of a lot more is college football, where Saturday night, the UC Bearcats go on the road after a 21-day layoff.
Mm-hmm.
All the, I don't want to say obstacles, but all the oddities of having to cancel or postpone a game last week, the first time they traveled in this environment, which is weird to begin with, then you do it coming off a game in which you don't play. The questions that we talked about for 3 weeks about Desmond Ridder, 9 o'clock game in the East Coast, in the eastern part of the country, an offense led by Shane Buechele, who was, you know, entering. I follow Heisman Watch on ESPN. His name was thrown around last week. He's not going to win the award. Wasn't going to win the award, but still, it illustrates how good he had been so far.
10 yards of completion.
10 yards of completion. 46 touchdown passes since the beginning of last year. They, you know, hung big numbers on teams throughout the first five games, won a couple of conference games. And the UC Bearcats, on a night where they were far from flawless, win by 29 points.
Yeah, when you look at the stats, like, they had 126 passing yards and 126 penalty yards.
It's not what you want.
And you still dominated a game. Say what you want. That SMU offense averaged 563 yards a game. They held them 290 yards under that average. 75 rushing yards. That was one of our questions going in, right, is this Marcus Freeman-led defense as good as advertised?
Mm-hmm.
I can confidently say yes.
Yeah.
And the other question was, at some point, a team's going to score enough that Des Ritter's going to have a 300-yard passing game. I don't know if they'll have that this year.
Yeah.
With Jared Doakes running the ball that well, with Des Ridder being used in the running game, look, I'm still not sold if they need to rely strictly on Des Ridder's arm that they can win a game like that in a shootout. I just don't think the defense will put them in a situation where they'll have to win in a shootout.
If they hold their six remaining regular season opponents to less than 30 points, will they win all six of those games?
Yes. And there's three teams that can do it. Tulsa, Central Florida, and this week against Memphis.
Discounting Houston.
Yes. I don't think they're consistent enough offensively.
I don't disagree.
To really worry UC. This Memphis offense should.
Mm-hmm.
UCF certainly has the capability to score 60 any given night. And Tulsa offensively and defensively, with what they've done to Oklahoma State, who's a really good football team, those are three really big tests. And this test now comes a week after you had to play a 9 o'clock game on the road Saturday night and Memphis played noon at home. You're coming back to a noon game Saturday. You've got to get it turned around quick, but so much of the greatness of Luke Fickell and Marcus Freeman is their ability to motivate and have guys ready, and I think they'll be ready for Saturday as well.
Yeah, I mean, you and I talked about it on your show earlier today. I think that is the most impressive win of the Luke Fickell era. You know,
I would agree.
Some might say UCF last year, a landmark game. Others might say, you know, the two games against UCLA, which were especially the first one landmark game. But the stakes, the level of domination by the defense, the environment the game was played in, and I'm not talking about home field.
They were underdogs.
Yeah, the environment, questions about the quarterback, Luke Fickell saying we need a better plan, which, by the way, I thought the game plan around Desmond Ritter's strengths on Saturday night was really, really good. But more than anything, the coming out party for a defense that, as you just said, confirmed what we thought before the season. You and I talked about it in July and early August. The potential for this defense, for this secondary in particular, to be maybe the best of our lifetimes at UC.
Yes.
And it's trending that way. They were good the first three games. You had to wonder how good they were relative to the opponent. SMU is going to score a lot of points this season.
Yeah.
Cincinnati often dominated them. Sonny Dykes, with some of his decision-making, didn't help. But
they were
dominant at times on Saturday.
And dominant not playing their best football.
Not even close.
On both sides of the ball.
Yeah.
So I think that's a huge step forward. A ton of confidence. And now you have to avoid that trap, that letdown game against a really good Memphis team who beat you twice last year to come out and right the wrongs here.
What? If you're Memphis, if you're the rest of the teams on their schedule and you're looking at Saturday night and you go, okay, well, they designed a game plan around what Dez can do well. What is the counter to that defensively?
Bring more numbers into the box. You have to be willing to go one-on-one. And that's the beauty of what UC does to teams, because now Dez Ritter has to make one-on-one throws. And if this team wants to fulfill the expectations, then he's going to have to win the one-on-one battles. But this team is going to continue to try to impose their will running the ball. And now Luke Fickell, Marcus Freeman, the rest of us know what we have known about this team. They're not going to beat themselves with going crazy. They're going to play on the conservative side and let the defense continue to do work.
You know who the first UC coach was to recruit Dez Ritter?
Who?
Zach Taylor.
Wow, genius.
We'll hear from the head coach of the Cincinnati Bengals coming up in about 15 minutes. I know you're excited for the Zach Taylor press
Always
conference.
Always am. Always
you're pumped
am.
For this. It's going to be big. That coming up at 4:45. It is 4:30. We're at Twin Peaks in Westchester for another 90 minutes here till 6. Here every single Monday, it's the Bet River Sportsbook Tony and Mo Football Show on ESPN 1530, Cincinnati Sports Station.
You've been listening to Football in the Natty, presented by RDI Corporation on ESPN 1530, the official home of the Bengals.
Bet River Sportsbook, Tony and Mo Football Show at Twin Peaks in Westchester. Local headlines brought to you by Kelsey Chevrolet, home of lifetime powertrain protection and guaranteed credit approval. From their family to yours for life, go to KelseyChev.com. Let's see. Trey Hopkins is in the NFL's concussion protocol for the week. We'll see how that evolves between now and next Sunday. Joe Mixon still being called day-to-day by Zach Taylor with that foot injury that kept him out of yesterday's game. Bobby Hart already ruled out for Sunday with a knee injury that took him out of yesterday's game. Jonah Williams with a neck injury that also caused him to leave yesterday's game. He is also being called day-to-day. More official injury report verbiage will be used on Wednesday. Meanwhile, tonight on Fox Sports 1360, we have Monday Night Football, Bears and Rams. Coverage starts at 8 o'clock. Desmond Ritter, UC's quarterback, has been named the American Athletic Conference's Offensive Player of the Week. UC getting set to take on Memphis on Saturday at Nippert Stadium. That game will kick off at noon. Cincinnati is a 6.5-point favorite. UC today announced that its current attendance protocols will remain in place through the final three home football games. Those protocols involve no fans being allowed to attend at Nippert Stadium beyond friends and family of players. Bearcats are 7th in both major polls. Ohio State holds steady at number 3 in both major polls. Indiana enters after their overtime upset win over Penn State, 17th, AP 19th in the coaches' poll. The Bet River Sportsbook Tony and Mo Football Show is a service of Hawksworth Blood Centers. Hawksworth donors save lives. Who will you save? And by Mercy Health Orthopedics and Sports Medicine, caring for athletes across greater Cincinnati. For more from Mercy Health Orthopedics and Sports Medicine, here's Tony.
All right, thanks, Mo. It's time now to take a few minutes to talk some injury questions related to what we've seen around the game of football. Each week we do so. The doctor from Mercy Health, to find out more of your injury questions or concerns, go to mercy.com. We are joined, as we are every Monday, by Dr. Matt Bosom. What's going on, Doc?
Oh, just enjoying another beautiful Monday in the fall in Cincinnati in 2020, yeah. Tony.
Yep, this is 2020 to a T today. And it was a former Cincinnati Bengal. That's going to be the topic of discussion today. The scary scene yesterday in the Dallas-Washington Redskins game where Andy Dalton is left pretty much motionless on the field. A concussion suffered during that Washington, the football team game. And now for Andy Dalton, after a concussion for players, what does these next few days and few steps look like?
It certainly was a scary blow to the head. And the first thing the athletic trainers and the physicians are evaluating with Andy is to make sure that his neck is okay. So they're gonna you might see him run out there. They're gonna grab his neck. They're gonna stabilize him. They're gonna make sure he's doing okay. Make sure he's conscious. Once they've made those calls, then they say, okay, now we're gonna focus away from the neck back to the head, and you're gonna get him off the field. And you saw that he immediately went straight to the locker room. There's no sideline assessment. There was going to be no question that this is a concussion and he was done for the day. So they make their assessment, and the assessment that happens in the locker room are a number of questions. And in the NFL, they use an iPad to track responses that he would have given when he was normal compared to the response he would give after he'd been hurt, to determine that. And thankfully, it was determined Andy was safe to travel back to Dallas with the team and be with his family. And then they start really a rehabilitation protocol not dissimilar to what you get with other injuries. There's a period of rest to make sure that he's not getting worse. And then there's a period of rehabilitation to make sure that his reflexes are responding appropriately, his eye movements are responding appropriately, and he can get back to doing the things that he wants to do. In the NFL, the return to play is rarely, if ever, less than a week. Oftentimes it can extend to 10, 11, sometimes even 14 days to get a guy to come back and do what they want to do. But Andy's going to bounce back and he's going to be okay. He did not have a large number of concussions or even any that I can recall when he was with the Bengals. But it's still a really scary thing, even if it's somebody who we only sort of pay attention to peripherally now here in the Queen City.
For parents with little league sports and high school sports, trainers can't be at every single play and see. So as a parent, just what is something that they can watch out for if maybe they suspect their athlete to have a concussion?
That's a really good question, Tony, and I appreciate you asking it. I think the biggest thing that all parents can really assess is, how is my kid acting? We know how our children act. What's a normal situation? And athletes routinely want to continue to participate, so they may say they're fine. But changes in mood, changes in behavior can be big red flags to assess initially. Certainly if they're complaining of objective things like, I can't see clearly or my head hurts, those are reasons to get evaluated. And I think we all as parents have to remember that what was perceived to be a toughness call maybe in the 80s and 90s is now something that we can understand as dangerous. So we don't want to take any pride in saying, oh, my kid finished a game with a concussion. That's neglectful. That's not what we want. You want to get the kid off the field. You don't ever want to put him back in when you have any suspicion of concussion. And then there's a lot of resources around the city. We're in a city with a large number of medical resources. Whether it's the pediatrician or family doctor or athletic trainer or sports medicine provider can evaluate your child and then get them back safely to the field or competition. But it's really important to remember that just because a concussion protocol may take, by definition, 6 or 7 days, just like I said earlier, while it's rare for an NFL player to come back in 6 or 7 days, it's much more rare for a youth athlete to come back in that short period of time. So it's okay for kids to get all the way better. And remember that it's not a mark of failure as a parent if your child gets hurt.
Right. 100%. Great stuff, as always, Dr. Matt Bosom, Mercy Health. Let's run it back next Monday, buddy.
Sounds good, Tony. Be safe.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
And thanks to our friends at Mercy Health for their continued support. To find out more of your injury questions or concerns, just go to mercy.com.
All right, Tony, thanks so much. 16 minutes away from 5 o'clock, Bet River Sportsbook, Tony and Mo Football Show. We are here at Twin Peaks in Westchester until 6 o'clock. We have so much more to get to between now and 6. We've got to go around the NFL. We've got to look ahead to next Sunday's tilt against the Tennessee Titans.
Ooh.
And Derrick Henry.
Can we talk some trade deadline, too?
And we're going to get to possibilities for the Bengals as the trade deadline approaches in just 8 days.
It's quite an hour we have coming up.
But first, Zach Taylor
Buckle up.
His Monday press conference, we are going to give you most of it here.
Yeah.
And then we'll just make you hang on to the end of the show to hear the rest. But the most of Zach Taylor's Monday press conference will be next on the Bet River Sportsbook Tony and Mo Football Show from Twin Peaks on ESPN 1530, Cincinnati Sports Station. 12 away from 5, Bet River Sportsbook Tony and Mo Football Show. We're at Twin Peaks in Westchester every single Monday. We do this show every single Monday. Zach Taylor does a press conference every single Monday. And we are contractually mandated to air it. But we don't have to air it in its entirety. See? I found the loophole. So we'll have the second part of it for you later on in the 5 o'clock hour. But this is the majority of it after the Bengals lost to the Browns yesterday at Paul Brown Stadium by a score of 37-34. Here is Zach chatting with the local football media earlier today.
Time for the Zach Taylor press conference, brought to you in part by Climate Master Geothermal Heat Pump Systems on ESPN 1530, the official home of the Bengals.
Yeah, we'll just keep those things internal right now.
What would you like to see from him going forward?
Well, from every player, you know, we just want everyone who's invested and doing everything we ask them.
Coach, quarterbacks got in a rhythm yesterday. As a play caller, it seemed like you got in a rhythm. At the end of the last drive of the third quarter, the first two drives of the fourth quarter, you had a 34-play stretch, 226 yards, 15 first downs, never got the third down. Everything was done on first and second down. That's pretty unusual stretch. Were you in a rhythm there as a play caller and execution?
It's not a rhythm on my part. It's a rhythm on the players' part. You know, they've gotten this confidence now. And this has happened really in a couple games we played where it doesn't really matter what play call you give them. They're just going to make it work and come to life. And that's when you know you're doing good things on offense. Now, we can't start patting ourselves on the back and think that this is easy, because it's not. It's those guys have really bought into what it looks like over the course of the week. And this really started after the Eagles game, you know, and I know we had a letdown there a couple weeks ago, but just hammering how important it is, these details, and these guys have bought in and taken it to the next level. And they did a great job last week. Like you said, I didn't look at my third down sheet hardly ever, because several of them were short yardage on a free play one time, a couple quarterback sneaks and some red zone calls, which again, it just didn't feel like I was ever looking at that third down section on my play sheet.
Zach, we've got a healthy list of injury options here. Pardon, not to be ironic there, but whenever you're ready, I'd like to just run down a few names. And you
can. Okay, yeah, go for it, Ben.
Yep. Let's go left to right on the line. Let's start with Jonah Williams.
Yeah, Jonah, I think Jonah's going to be day-to-day. You know, it was scary there during the game, but things are starting to look up, you know, and so he'll be day-to-day. And we'll just continue to gather more information to see how he feels starting with tomorrow.
All right, Trey Hopkins.
He's in concussion protocol, and it's all about how guys can respond, you know. And so, again, we'll know more on him probably on Wednesday.
A curveball here for you, Xavier Suofilo.
Xavier, the plan is to get to the bye and then observe where we're at. He's on pace. You know, that's kind of what we laid out for him. And, again, I don't want to make any predictions that he's ready after the bye, but I think it's going to be around that time frame.
All right, a right tackle. We have Bobby Hart.
Yeah, Bobby's going to be out. You know, and he'll be out for this game. I don't want to make any predictions for how long that'll be, but he won't be able to go this Sunday against Tennessee.
All right, and we got Trey Waynes at the corner.
No update on Trey Waynes right now.
Okay, and then Joe Mixon.
Joe will be day-to-day. You know, I think obviously he missed last game, and we'll see where he responds on Wednesday. But, again, have dodged some bullets. You don't want to make any predictions going forward, but some injuries – aren't always as serious as you think they are initially.
What was Bobby Hart's injury? I don't think that was declared yesterday.
Yeah, Bobby, it's his shoulder, Bobby's shoulder, Bobby's knee. I'm sorry. Bobby hurt his knee. So there on that third to last play of the game.
Coach, you have to be pleased with the offense and the players understanding now that, like a good point guard, Joe Burrow is just going to find the open guy, and that could be anybody in any game. And it's showing itself now.
It is. You know, you got to start with the protection, first of all. Those guys up front did a really, really good job. And that's with the running backs and the tight ends as well. And then, yes, Joe plays a major part in this. Joe kind of brings this whole thing to life. But the detail at the receivers right now was really good. You know, and the tight end, Drew Sample, did a great job as well. You know, he got us a lot of yards after the catch where we're in some second longer situations and he gets his first down. So, again, it's just – it's fun to watch those guys find the rhythm and be detailed and dialed in and playing as an all-11 group there. That was really good to see yesterday.
Back to the injury, second coach. With the bye week coming up after the Tennessee game, is that play a factor in any of it, or it wouldn't matter at all if you had a bye week?
Yeah, no, I don't. We want to go win, and if guys are healthy enough to play without compromising their future, you know, then you weigh that into the decision, you know, to see if they can get out there. But, again, we approach it with what's best for this Sunday.
Zach, are you still confident in Lou and what he's doing with the defense?
Yeah, I am. You know, it's just – there's a couple plays that we leave on the field there where the game should end. And it can come in the third quarter, just getting off the field. We got to stop third and short, whatever it was. We got to stop. We just lined up in the neutral zone. It's as simple as that. That could have been the turning point in the game right there with the way our offense was playing to go take a 2-score lead and then put the thing to bed. You know, we had a sack opportunity the first play of the drive that they won the game on. Let's just finish that play. And now they got receivers down the field and – you know, they're going to clock the ball with probably 25 seconds left and be in a really tough situation there on a negative, you know, on a second long situation. So, again, it's everything. You know, we always got to evaluate our scheme and make sure we're putting our guys in the best position. This guy's stepping up and making plays when your number's called. And too many times they made those plays and we didn't. But what you don't see on that tape is a lack of effort by anybody. And when things are going the way they are, you know, you're giving up points on a lot of those drives there. That's an easy thing to find, I think, in some cases, and it wasn't an easy thing to find. Our guys are bought in. They're doing the right thing. It's just more step away in some instances. And, you know, it's again, keep hammering those little details with these guys. And there's a couple things that we can fix even before the snap that are going to make us a better football team.
How can you get more pressure? I mean, you got the guys you have right now. You're not getting back there enough. How is that something you have to scheme up? Do you have to be more aggressive and blitz? How do you go about attacking that issue?
It's both. You got to be smart with it all, you know. And again, you can bring pressure and thin out the back end and put yourself. It's not just the pressure. It's even when you bring a 5-man pressure, all 5 guys gotta help win their 1-on-1s, you know, up front there. And sometimes it's a 4-man pressure, and sometimes it's different looks we can bring, but. It's certainly, you know, we're trying to put the guys in the best position to go make the plays. And, again, we just haven't quite got it done yet.
Zach, I know we've talked about this a little bit. Is there a difference between – I know Gino and Carlos played the same number of snaps, but are both circumstances the same or are those different?
Every situation with every single player is different.
Well, to be more specific, I mean, is Gino's limited snap count more just because he's coming back from the injury and you want him to be effective when he's in the game? I mean, is it as simple as that?
It is as simple as that, you know, and again, it's I know that's where he feels comfortable right now. And again, just getting him those limited snaps, it could increase on a weekly basis. The conversations I've had with Gino are outstanding. Gino is he's a class act here. And again, he's working his way back. It's his third week now. He's getting those snaps on known passing situations. But again, we'll keep moving him along as we see fit. But again, Gino and I have had some really good conversations. He's a class act.
There's word out there that Spain, the offensive lineman from Buffalo, the guard from Buffalo, is visiting or has visited. Is there any truth to that?
You know, we're evaluating all those options there, you know, and we'll see where the week goes with Quinn.
Zach, when you have a guy, just one guy that's kind of speaking out on social media about frustration with the team and the coaching staff, on the flip side of that, yesterday when we talked to the rest of the guys here on Zoom, they praised your vision and talked about how much they still believe in you and kind of flipping the narrative from what we've seen from one player. Does that mean something to you that guys believe in you even through, you know, this stretch of losing right now?
They're just a belief in the team. And it has nothing to do with me. It has everything to do with the belief that the staff is instilling in the players and the players have bought in and they see it, you know, and it is hard, I'm sure, for the general public to see it when you're not putting wins on the paper, because that is important. We got to win football games. But when you got players who've played football their entire life that know we are inches away from turning a corner here. And sometimes you got to get that first win so it can pile on from there. But it truly is an amazing locker room. And when I say I'm proud to coach these guys every day I walk in there, I mean it, because not many guys would stick through this kind of adversity and stick together and continue to fight the way they have. And they're doing it because they believe in the way that we're doing it. They believe in each other. And they also know how close we are, and that at any given moment, we're going to create that opportunity for ourselves that gets us that win. And we're just going to build on it from there.
This has been the Zac Taylor Press Conference on ESPN 1530, the official home of the Bengals.
Zac Taylor saying some stuff to the local football media today. I thought it was interesting. He talked pretty effusively about Geno Atkins, called him a class act. He wanted to, as you might understand, sidestep the questions specifically about Carlos Dunlap. It's a couple minutes away from 5 o'clock. Tony Pike is here. I'm here. We want you to be here. We're at Twin Peaks in Westchester for the Bet River Sportsbook Tony and Mo Football Show. We have an hour to go. We'll get into further detail on yesterday's game against the Cleveland Browns. Talking about a key member of the defense that I think the Bengals have a pretty key decision to make about coming up in the 5 o'clock hour as well. More on the Bearcats. And the trade deadline is approaching. We'll get to some Bengals trade possibilities. A lot to touch on between now and 6 o'clock here at Twin Peaks. Tony and Mo Football Show. Thanks to Bet River Sportsbook. This is ESPN 1530 Cincinnati Sports Station.
This is the Bet Rivers Sportsbook Tony and Mo Football Show, live from Twin Peaks in Westchester. Brought to you in part by Encore Technologies. Visit Encore.tech, Miami Valley Gaming. Get ready to get lucky at Miami Valley Gaming. Stone Statements. Bring your dream kitchen to life. StoneStatements.com. Nixco Plumbing. Don't go to the average Joe. Call Nixco. Superior Honda. SuperiorHondaStore.com. Simply Superior. Hard Rock Casino. Get in the game. First State Bank. You're at home with us. Life Center. Changing lives through organ and tissue donation. R&L Carriers. Your global transportation provider. Visit RLC.com today. And by Bet Rivers, your hometown sportsbook. Visit BetRivers.com. This is Cincinnati's ESPN 1530, the official home of the Bengals.
All right, 5 after 5. This is the Bet River Sportsbook Tony and Mo Football Show. We're at Twin Peaks in Westchester every single Monday. I think this is your favorite hour of the show.
Yes.
I think this is the part of the show that
the
you
golden
enjoy.
Hour.
The golden hour.
Yeah.
Yes, the golden
hour. We got everything
hour.
Else out of the way. Well, minus, you know, a couple more minutes.
We've got a few more minutes of Zac Taylor for you a little bit later, just in case you thought, you know what, I had heard everything. No. We got some more Zac for you. We'll do that coming up at 5:33. But by and large, it's you and I on the game yesterday. I know you want to talk about the trade deadline, which is approaching. And we'll get to the trade deadline, which is approaching. And more
quick
on Carlos Dunlap. Let's talk about yesterday's game a little bit, because we should be talking about Joe Burrow today. And it's funny, the Cleveland Browns are a national talking point because of Baker and all the personalities, and they got a lot of run this morning on some of the shows that I watch and listen to, but the praise has been almost universal in its effusiveness for Joe Burrow. And yes, I know that's not what a lot of people want to hear about, and we'll complain more about the defense a little bit later. But to me, the real sad part of the way the game ended yesterday is, look, I didn't need to watch Joe Burrow yesterday to feel like, man, the Bengals got their guy. But if you were wondering, if yesterday was the first time you had checked in on the Bengals this year and you wanted to see what all the hype was about, I think you saw it yesterday afternoon.
Yeah, he can make all the throws. He's a leader on and off the field. Take away his play aside, go back to training camp and how every player, without being provoked, would go out of their way to talk about Joe Burrow. When this team spoke about the social injustices, they asked Joe Burrow to speak outside the Freedom Center. He was, from day one, the leader of this team and the leader of this offense. And so you were excited about that, but then your expectations are, well, you know, A.J. Green's coming back from injury, and, you know, what's T. Higgins going to be, the offensive line issues? You know, what can you really expect? And I don't know if you can find anyone that expected more of Joe Burrow.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's not only lived up to the hype, he's blown past it at this point. A 400-yard passing game, what he's able to do from a competitive standpoint, it's one thing to pile up junk yards, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're down 17, the defense is in prevent. His biggest plays are when it's a one-possession game.
Yeah.
And week in and week out, he's given this team a chance to win, and because of other circumstances, this team has not won. But Joe Burrow, from a rookie, he doesn't play like a rookie. He plays like a 5-10-year veteran that's one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. And, look, if you're a Bengal fan, if you're someone in this organization, that's one thing you don't have to worry about. Joe Burrow's the guy.
Mm-hmm.
He's checked the box.
Kind of running out of ways to say that, too, aren't we?
Right. I mean, we're 1-5-1. You would think that this team is 5-2. But Joe Burrow has been that good. They're just no help around him.
And
right
I
now.
Think that's the frustrating part. I think we sort of built into our expectations for the first half of the year. We built in, okay, he's going to struggle at times. And he's not been infallible. He threw a pick yesterday. He threw another ball that should have been picked off. But the moments where he's shined, the moments where he's left you feeling encouraged, have certainly outnumbered the ones that he's...
I felt like when they got the ball back yesterday, they were going
to
score.
Yeah, 4:53 to go.
If you already have that feeling.
I put it on Twitter. I said it's the same situation as last week. Last week, they didn't come up big. They did use a timeout during that drive yesterday, but
Samaje Perine was not on the field.
Correct. I don't know why he would be on the field, but nonetheless, you got to have 11 guys.
Yeah.
4:53 to go, Joe Burrow, in a situation where not only do you know you have to score, it came at the end of a day, and you can... relate to this, having played at UC for a team that had terrible defenses. When you get the ball every single time and you know you got to score, that's the environment Joe Burrow was in yesterday. And then you do it at the end of the game. He came up big, and the real sort of, I hate the word tragic, but the tragic part of the way this season has gone has been that Joe Burrow has been, I think, better than all of us expected in the short term. In the short term, mm-hmm. We built in, okay, he's going to have rookie moments, no preseason. What's that going to be like? We built in some games that we kind of thought, okay, he's going to look like he's in over his head. Baltimore, he kind of did, but still, by and large, I think he's exceeded everybody's expectations. It's added up to one win.
Yeah, with that, and I think that's the frustrating thing is he's going to get lumped into this category now, right? Well, he hasn't won the close game. Hasn't won the game. No, yet he's put this team in a position
to do
so.
If you say that, you're not watched. If you say that, you have no concept of the way
this
team is
played. That's a statistic 3 or 4 years down the road that
right.
When people just throw random numbers out there. You're like, wait a second. The start of his career that could have been 5-2. He put him in a position to win games and a position to compete. Look, he's doing it with a little bit less than a full deck.
Uh-huh.
When you look at the offensive line, you look at guys that have missed due to injury. And, again, I've talked about it this year. You look at what it's been from a play caller standpoint, from a game management standpoint. They have not had a full deck with the Bengals, and Joe Burrow is still playing at a all-pro level as one of the best quarterbacks in the league.
No Joe Mixon yesterday, still being called day-to-day by Zach Taylor. The offensive line was patchwork. Hart and Williams and Hopkins each leave the game with various injuries. Billy Price has to play center. It was a series of less than ideal circumstances, and yet when the game was on the line, he came up huge, and that's what we should be talking about. Instead, it's all about this terrible defense.
Well, he came up big, too. The last drive of the game, well, there was a false start.
Yeah.
There was multiple false starts. It's like, man, they're trying everything they can. 3rd and 11, they ran a quarterback draw where he puts his body on the line to get a first down. I mean, he's literally doing everything possible to win games, and that to me – no matter what else happens, when Joe Burrow's at home at night, he's just his thoughts, not what he has to say in the public. You got to be frustrated at how well you've played, and you look up and you have one win.
Yeah.
From a guy that from day one said what? I want to win a Super Bowl.
All I care about is winning.
That's it.
All I care about
no
is winning.
No stats, wins and losses.
And you and I have both talked about that separately and together, what he has to be thinking, the mental notes that he's taking. All of the offseason talk that – annoyed us to a degree was about, God, why would Joe Burrow want to go to Cincinnati? Boy, that's where quarterbacks go to die. Man, they're going to ruin him. And I thought a lot of that stuff was silly. But to me, it was always, it's not about what Joe Burrow thinks in February or March before the draft. He has no control over that. The Bengals are going to take him, and he would have been out of his mind to say, I'm not going to play, right?
Right.
Get that first season off the slate. Get it under your belt. Get as close as you can to that second contract. But over the course of time, you do wonder, the longer this takes to get turned around, the longer they stay with players who are underperforming, the longer they stay unable to fix a certain area of the team. This team's defense has been a problem for a while now. 2 years ago was one of the worst in the history of the NFL. The longer it takes you to get all that stuff figured out, Joe is saying all the right things. I thought it was telling that he said the right things about Zach Taylor after the game yesterday, and I believe him. I take him at face value. Yeah. But look, I watched it with Carson Palmer. And maybe you're not going to like me saying this, but I watched Carson Palmer get to a point where he's like, man, to hell with this. I'd rather retire. I don't think Joe Burrow's going to do that. And it took
Andrew Luck.
Yeah, I've seen players outside of the Bengals and also that have been a part of this organization that have gotten to a point where they go, I want out. We don't want Joe Burrow to get to that point. Right. And there's a really good chance that if you do and you move on from Joe Burrow, the next guy looks a hell of a lot more like Andy Dalton than Joe Burrow.
Yeah.
You have to take advantage of Joe Burrow in a rookie contract. You have to win within his first four or five years. You have to do the things as an organization and as a team that compel him to want to stay here for the remainder of his career.
Well, you mentioned the Rams team that went to the Super Bowl. A lot of that is the brilliance of Sean McVay as a play caller and motivator. A lot of it's too. Jared Goff was on a rookie deal.
Mm-hmm.
So you can build the team in the way you need to build it to be the most successful.
Sure.
And that's what Sean McVay was able to do. Look, I just worry because we use this word and we throw it around all the time, urgency.
Yeah.
And yet the head coach, it feels like every week he's just nice and calm. Like at one point, like, hey, what's happening isn't okay. And we do need more urgency. And we do need to figure out a way to turn this around. Not – it's coming. You know,
yeah.
Just wait.
Yeah.
It'll be okay. Just wait. We're doing some of the right things. We're going to piece this together. And when we do, man, when we get there, it's going to be worth all of it.
So
I want urgency.
The last couple of years of Andy Dalton in Cincinnati, this is no knock on Andy, who was a fine player. And God knows after watching him get nearly decapitated by John Bostic, I hope Andy's okay. I hope he's okay enough to play soon, hopefully at Paul Brown Stadium in December. But the last couple of years of Andy Dalton, as much as it was easy to get frustrated at Marvin Lewis or whatever, Zach Taylor last year, and talk about the defense, all of us kind of knew, look, none of this stuff matters until they can hit the reset button at quarterback.
Correct.
And hopefully they're going to be able to get somebody who's better than the guy they have right now. Well, because they went 2-14 last year, they did. So urgency wasn't a big deal for me the last couple of years because until you figure out quarterback,
yep.
The rest of the stuff is window dressing. Now quarterback is figured out.
Yep.
Now it's when you get urgent. You always use the word urgency. Urgency is of utmost importance right now. How do we win? You and I talked often during this offseason. What's the goal for 2020? By the end of 2020, you and I both wanted to look at this organization and go, you know what? They can make the playoffs in 2021.
Yes.
Are you and I going to be able to say that about the way this team is constructed right now?
As of right now, no. From an organizational standpoint, from a coaching standpoint, from a roster standpoint, still have a lot of questions.
Correct.
The only question I don't have is quarterback.
Mm-hmm. Correct. Which is where I was in August.
Yes.
It's where I was in August.
So nothing's changed.
Right.
So Zach Taylor, we keep going back to this whole thinking he's got more equity than he does. They're 3-19-1. They're 1-12-1 in games decided by 8 points or less.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care how you slice it up, offense, defense, who struggled. That's wins and losses. We are judged in life, no matter what we do, by how successful we are. And right now,
well,
Zach Taylor.
That doesn't bode well for me, but.
No,
okay.
Not at all.
Not at all.
Right now, Zach Taylor's 3-19-1.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, much like, and you and I, we said this off the air, we would always ask the question, I would ask the question a lot of Andy Dalton. At the end of the day, coaches, personnel in place, could you look at Andy Dalton and say, you know what? That guy can lead us to a Super Bowl and put the team on his back if needed. And a lot of times the answer about Andy Dalton was no.
Correct.
A lot of things had to be right around Andy Dalton.
Mm-hmm.
Joe Burrow is a guy that I think can lead this team and push them to a Super Bowl. The question is, at the end of the day, if you poll 100 people, is Zach Taylor the coach that can lead a team to the Super Bowl and win? I think that's a sticky situation right now.
I go back to the search. When they conducted the coaching search, does this team look like they turned over every conceivable stone and hired the best in the world at what they do?
I have questions about the search anyway.
Well, the search was, it felt like, and I know they interviewed other candidates, but the search felt like, okay, young guy, offensive guy, Sean McVay dust. Is there anybody on the Rams? Okay, he's young. He's a quarterback's coach, and he's probably had lunch with Sean McVay. Let's hire Zach. That's what it felt like.
Right.
And maybe
he's not Sean McVay.
Right. I know it was more involved, but that was the perception. What they've done to this point
through 3-19-1 has only fed that perception. You're right. Everything, every question about this team should be framed through the filter of, can this player, can this coach, can this unit, whatever, can we win a championship? Joe Burrow can win a Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not now. Joe Burrow can win a Super Bowl. Is Zach Taylor a championship head coach? Is Lou Anarumo a championship defensive coordinator? Are any of these players they have on defense guys that other championship caliber teams would like to have?
No. And when
so then we're spinning our wheels.
That's the problem, because watch the Monday night game tonight and watch what the Rams do offensively. Even Kyle Shanahan, when they were struggling in San Francisco, you knew by watching that, like, man, he's going to turn them around.
Yeah.
They got the right guy. I don't feel like that with Zach Taylor.
Yeah.
And you feel it at times and in different moments. But again, when push comes to shove and this team offensively or defensively needs to make a play, they have not made the plays. He has 3 wins as a head coach. The New York Jets.
Bad.
The Browns last year when they were quitting.
Bad.
And the Jacksonville Jaguars. That's
really
your 3 wins.
Yeah.
What's your landmark marquee win right now if you're Zach Taylor? You don't have it. And again, whether it's offense, defense, special teams, penalties, you're the head coach. Your design, wins and losses are on you. Just as they are on the quarterback and everyone else on that team, you've got to be accountable for it.
The San Francisco 49ers, the year after they hired Kyle Shanahan, Jimmy Garoppolo gets hurt.
Mm-hmm.
They have to turn to Nick Mullins. The season spiraled out of control. I could watch that team play. At the end of the year, they picked off wins against Seattle, against Denver. They won some games with Nick Mullins playing quarterback. And I remember you and I talking about this going, you know what? I think San Francisco's got their coach. I think San Francisco's got their guy.
Arizona wasn't great last year. At the end of the season, though, you were like, man, if Kingsbury starts to get his guys in there.
Yeah.
And now they've won 7 of their last 10.
I kind of feel like he still needs a director of common sense based on what I watched last night. But you're over – yeah.
Offensively, they know what they are.
I keep harping on this, and I know it gets repetitive and trite. We are a season and a half into this. And if you ask me, is Zach Taylor the guy, I can't say yes. If I can't say yes now, am I really going to say yes at the end of this season?
But the crazy thing is, the blueprint was on the field yesterday for you. Is Cleveland, the Cleveland Browns, are they skill player-wise, player-for-player, better than the Bengals?
Not the dudes who were out there yesterday.
No. So I look at, okay, Freddie Kitchens was a disaster. They tried to make the trendy hire. He wasn't the guy. Cleveland, as bad as they are as a franchise, said, you know what? That's on us. We messed that up.
Yeah.
I know it's not we're done. We're moving on from Freddie Kitchens. He's not the guy. Now it feels like at 5-2 that Kevin Stefanski is the guy. It feels like the Browns have their guy. And again, for what the Bengals are trying to do, you're not just trying to win. You're looking up now at the Browns, the Steelers, and the Ravens. Not
right.
Just for this year. For the foreseeable future, those 3 teams, you got to jump.
You better
get some kind of advantage.
You are in a division with 2 men who have won championships. Mike Tomlin's career is Hall of Fame-esque. I know there's a lot of people who don't want to hear that, but it's Hall of Fame-esque.
Coaching matters.
John Harbaugh has had a lot of success, and he's won a championship. One more thing on Zach Taylor. I do think it is it certainly speaks well to Zach that the players on the team who aren't named Carlos Dunlap have spoken out against Carlos Dunlap. They've certainly come to the aid of their head coach. That's a good thing. It's good. It's good.
Yeah.
It is a step in the right direction when Joe Burrow's Zach's going to get us to where we want to go. But let me ask you this. Over in Zach's first 2 seasons, twice now, he has had a player basically challenge the head coach's authority.
Yep.
Cordy Glenn refused to play last year. Carlos Dunlap is bringing attention to himself multiple times. I encourage you to read what Paul Daner Jr. wrote in The Athletic today about where Carlos is with this team, what he's done, not showing or showing up late for meetings, what he put on Instagram on Saturday with the whiteboard and the rotations, tweeting last night about selling his house. Does that reflect more on those 2 players individually, or do you combine them and use it to reflect poorly on
Some
Zach
would
Taylor?
Say A.J. Green did it in a certain way last year.
I think A.J. Green very much did it last year.
Like if that team was in contention or he was somewhere else, he could have played.
So one case is an isolated instance, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, that's that player. But if I then start adding them up, and again, we're not talking about 5 years. We're talking about a season and a half. And I take A.J. and Glenn and Dunlap, and I stack them on top of each other.
What does that say anything about Zach Taylor, or does that get canceled out essentially by the fact that a number of guys on the team are speaking out in favor of their coach?
People bashed Mike Tomlin when Le'Veon Bell and Antonio Brown drama started.
They did, yes.
Oh, he can't even control the locker
Correct.
Room.
He got a lot of that.
And then you watch those two leave and what they did, and then you're like, man, he held that together for a long time.
Yeah.
As much as those guys went their different, he held that together. Look, 99% of players aren't going to come out and bash their coach. They're going to say the things that we've heard the Bengals say.
Mm-hmm.
He's our guy. We want to win for him. You have to say that, yeah, or else you have a Dunlap situation. But that doesn't mean that outside of that, when those guys are just talking amongst themselves, young head coach, unproven track record, no experience as a coordinator, now 3-19-1, you don't think anyone in the locker room talks about that when they're together? Absolutely you do. You'd be crazy not to. It's 4-8 at UC as a coordinator, fifth worst offense in the country, 3-19-1, a young guy with no track record. People are talking in the locker room about that.
Does, you know, Marvin Lewis was here for 16 years. How many, and I'm asking this without going through my mental Rolodex of all 16 years. How many Dunlap slash AJ Green slash Cordy Glenn situations did Marvin Lewis have over his last 4 years? How many did he have across his 16 seasons?
Right.
Not that he didn't have disciplinary issues on his team. He did.
This is Football in the Natty, brought to you in part by CME Pipelining and Sewer Repair and by Skyline Chili on ESPN 1530, the official home of the Bengals.
28 away from 6, this is ESPN 1530. Bet River Sportsbook, Tony and Mo Football Show, presented by Twin Peaks and hosted by Twin Peaks. By the way, Zach was asked this by Dave Lapham in the part of the press conference that we had for you before. Quentin Spain mm-hmm. is a name that we talked about last week, a guard who had signed a 3-year deal with the Bills this offseason and yet only played 6 games. He was cut loose last week by the Buffalo Bills. Ian Rappaport of NFL Media is reporting that Spain is heading to Cincinnati this week for a workout. Now, Zach Taylor did not comment specifically on that, and I can certainly understand why. But they already had a need on the offensive line. Then you add to the mix all the stuff that kind of went down yesterday with injuries. Mm-hmm. That could be worth paying attention to. Offensive line help, Tone.
Well, you know, the track record of getting linemen from Buffalo is fantastic. look, I don't know if Quentin Spain would work. What I do know is that it would send some type of a positive message to Joe Burrow. Like, hey, we are recognizing as a team that the amount of hits you're taking isn't right. I don't know if this is going to be the end all. I don't know if this is going to work long term, but we're trying. And at least if you're sending that message to Joe Burrow, that puts you in a good spot.
You know what's interesting? If you look at the output by the Bengals running game yesterday, which was not great, it sort of illustrates how good Joe Burrow was. The Bengals offensive linemen, and they had to use different guys. Billy Price got in 49 snaps, graded out okay as a run blocker, 70.7. Michael Jordan graded out okay, 71.5. Trey Hopkins, who played roughly half the snaps because he came out with, now he's in concussion protocol, was terribly graded as a pass blocker, but graded out close to 80 as a run blocker. Bobby Hart was the highest graded Bengals offensive player, graded out at 88.2 run blocking. Jonah Williams graded out well run blocking. Bengals still couldn't get much of anything going. In terms of pass blocking, Billy Price got a good grade in his 45 snaps.
2020. That's where we're at. I have no answer. I have no answer for how it happened. I chalked that one up to 2020.
All right, trade deadline is a week from tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
The Bengals historically haven't been active at the trade deadline. The last time they were, they couldn't get a deal done for A.J. McCarron to the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah.
What? I know you want to see the Bengals do something.
Yes.
The guys that we've talked about them dealing, the Carlos Dunlap thing, I can't imagine there's much of a market for him.
I don't care if there's much of one. Is there any? A seventh-round pick.
Seventh-round pick in exchange for a guy that you got to pay a lot of money to still, who hasn't been very effective, who's been a locker room problem this year. I'm not sure you can get us, especially if the Bengals kind of make it known we're going to move on from this dude anyway.
Yeah, what are you losing? Like, I just don't want Carlos Dunlap to hold this team hostage.
I don't want him to be here. I'd take whatever I can get for him.
If you get a seventh rounder right now, you take it. Seattle needs help on the D-line. Here's the problem. Because no matter who we talk about, people talk about the Bengals historically as they just speak a different language. We spoke yesterday or last week about the early asking price.
High
for some
asking
of these
price.
Being
yeah,
high.
Yeah.
Okay. All I want to know is at the end of the day, if you turned over all the avenues, if you, as a front office, I don't know who makes the calls. Did you push to make stuff happen? Did you call about Carlos Dunlap? Did you call a Green Bay about A.J. Green? I just want to know that you're trying, because if you're just sitting there waiting for the phone to ring, it's not going to happen.
You can change your asking price, and the good news is there at least was an asking price. Mm-hmm. It wasn't met with a no, which tells you that there's, you know, those guys aren't untouchable. I think with A.J. Green, he's had a really good last couple of games, and which, you know, look, he's responded with his play after what everybody said about him after Baltimore. I just think the price tag, A.J. Green's personal price tag is too high, that you still owe him, with 9 games to go in the season, roughly $10 million. I don't think there's that many teams that could take that on. Seattle, they try to get Antonio Brown.
Right.
Maybe you could package Dunlap and Green to Seattle and get it like a 5 or something.
Look, here's the thing. You can be buyers and sellers at the same time.
Sure.
You're trying to build, right? We're done this year. You're not going to the playoffs. Right. You're not winning the division. 1-5-1. You have an opportunity to grow and to get this team ready to compete next year. You cannot just sit around, because look, let's say you get 2 5th rounds, a 6th round, and a 7th round for a couple guys you move. That doesn't necessarily mean you're drafting guys there.
Right.
You could package those and move up in the draft. Or Trent Williams this year went for a 5th rounder. San Francisco sent Washington a 5th round pick and a 3rd rounder next year and got an all-pro tackle.
All right.
There are moves out there, but you have to have draft capital. You have to have the ability to say, you know what? Fire sale it. 6-7 guys are untouchable. Everyone else, make us an offer.
The untouchables on this team are who?
Joe Mixon, Joe Burrow, Tyler Boyd, T. Higgins, maybe Jonah Williams, based on how you're viewing him from a coaching standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
I think Jesse Bates, and I would say DJ Reader. Outside of that, like, you want to talk about selling high right now? You could get a high return of investment on William Jackson. Because what you're going to have to do next year, realize Trey Waynes is being paid like a top corner in the NFL.
Right.
You think William Jackson is going to take less than him? You're going to probably have 2 of the top 10 cornerback salaries on your roster? Like, good luck explaining that when your defensive line is decimated. William Jackson could bring you maybe a second round pick.
So you're not interested in trying to sign William Jackson for the money he's asking for?
Nope. Not when I just paid Trey Waynes.
How's that
I don't know
investment
yet.
Paid out?
I don't know yet, but they paid him for a reason. They paid him because they can think he – I mean, I just – to me, there's just not that many untouchables with this team. And I mentioned
– I think some of those guys you mentioned are untouchables just because they cost too much. Like, nobody –
right.
Wants DJ Reader. He's hurt. I mean,
right.
Know. But even if he got to this offseason, like, hey, you could trade for DJ Reader. I don't know if anybody wants him for the kind of money he's.
But what I'm more interested in is how I'm building this team for next year. Pittsburgh got crushed when they made that Minkah Fitzpatrick deal.
They did.
And now, best defense in football, arguably.
Yeah.
Minkah Fitzpatrick's an anchor on that defense. There's a player by the name of Quinnen Williams available.
Mm-hmm. From the Jets.
Plays for the Jets. He was the 3rd round pick in 2019. Jets are obviously a fire sale.
Should be.
Anyone's available.
Yeah.
If you're the Bengals.
They traded a dude after a game last week.
Yes.
Drove to Tampa from
right. Mo, here's where I'll finish this the Bengals side. If you're trying to build for next year, and we've talked about helping Joe Burrow.
Mm-hmm.
You look at this division, what do the teams do really well? Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt, running game.
Mm-hmm.
Lamar Jackson and the Ravens, running game.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly Pittsburgh and their smash-mouth style of play. If you could find a way to get Quinnen Williams and match him with DJ Reader.
Pretty good.
Jesse Bates on the back end. And then look at your weapons on offense. That's a good starting point.
Okay.
That's a good starting point to say, you know what? If I'm going to make the playoffs, I got to do something in my division, because you can't have, you know, 6 losses in your division.
Yeah.
How are you going to beat those teams? Well, I'm going to step up right away and stop the run. I'm going to field Jesse Bates, who's graded out as one of the best safeties in football on the back end. And then you hope that these linebackers take the next step. You hope that you can find other pieces intermittently to fill in there. And then you do what you have to the offensive line.
The longer we go, the less likely it is we could play the rest of Zach Taylor.
Yeah.
Has that been by design?
What?
For you?
Huh?
Just go on and...
Yeah, just ramble.
Take the segment 10 minutes late?
Just ramble.
20 away from 6. I want to spend a few minutes on the Tennessee Titans and then some things that went down around the NFL yesterday.
Yeah.
And...
Finish off
with ZT.
Love it.
We got like 6 minutes left of him.
Great.
Bet River Sportsbook, Tony and Mo Football Show from Twin Peaks in Westchester. Mo Egger and Tony Pike here every single Monday afternoon on ESPN 1530 Cincinnati Sports Station.
You've been listening to Football in the Natty, brought to you in part by Bet Rivers Sportsbook on ESPN 1530, the official home of the Bengals.
We have 3 minutes because we got to get to the rest of Zach Taylor's press conference. And I got a text here from somebody who's literally, it says right there, I've been waiting for the Zach Taylor press conference. Please don't skip it. And if you're not going to play it, post it so I can listen to it. I want to deliver for people.
Man.
So we'll keep our remarks brief before we turn things over to Zach. This team's going to get a Tennessee Titans team that came was a missed Steven Goskowski field goal away from going to overtime against the Steelers, who jumped out to a big lead yesterday. Derrick Henry didn't have a bad game, but he didn't have the kind of game that you expect. Was held to 75 yards. They played from way behind. This is going to be a load. And Ryan Tannehill in Tennessee, under a guy that I think is a top five head coach in Mike Vrabel, Ryan Tannehill has played himself into the conversation to be a top maybe 10, 12 quarterback in the NFL.
Rightfully so. This team has an identity. It is a run-heavy team. But when teams load the box to try to take that away, they are more than capable with weapons on the outside and Ryan Tannehill to beat you. So you, as crazy as it sounds, you got to try to play level. You got to try to play even numbers and hope that your guys make plays on a guy like Derrick Henry. That's where Pittsburgh had success early on in that game, and that's kind of where Derrick Henry wears you out through the course of a game. So it's a tall test for the Cincinnati Bengals this week.
The Steelers are 6-0, and yet I still feel like people are talking about them like they're a tier below Kansas City and Baltimore in the AFC.
That's a close tier.
I agree.
The way that Pittsburgh defense plays,
exactly,
and how Ben has bounced back. Claypool has been fantastic. Dante Johnson is fantastic. Juju is back to himself. We question this team's skill weapons kind of in the offseason. They have addressed that, and they are a offense and defense a scary team.
Play of the day in the NFL came in the Sunday night game, which was fantastic.
Loved
it. DK Metcalf chasing down Buda Baker of the Cardinals after a pick. He runs 114 yards to chase him down and prevent the score on a drive after which Arizona would set up offensively. They didn't even score. It saved 7 points, saved 3 points.
Effort. That's all it is. It's effort. You can't coach stuff like that, and those are the type of guys you want on your team. Those are momentum plays. Certainly they play the game, and you mentioned it off air, something we saw from Josiah DeGuara last year.
Yeah,
twice. University of Cincinnati.
The other fun play in the NFL yesterday was Todd Gurley scoring when the Lions were letting him, and he didn't want to, shouldn't have.
Oof.
Lions players are signaling touchdown, convincing the ref that he got in. Atlanta gets Atlanta scores to take the lead. Enough time for Detroit to come back and win the football game. The Lions are 3-3, and I think they have saved Matt Patricia's job, at least for the while.
What'd That's Gurley's thing against the Lions. He,
twice. It happened two years ago, I think. Yeah.
When he didn't score, and he could have, and it would have put him up 2 scores.
Yeah.
And then he scores yesterday.
All right. Now,
we're
going to get a break in.
Yep.
And then when we come back.
That's it.
The final few moments of Zach Taylor. You'll still say goodbye afterwards. Don't think you get off early.
Yep. See ya.
The final few minutes of Zach Taylor's Monday press conference. Next on ESPN 1530 Cincinnati Sports Station. Literally nothing is happening in the NHL, but we do have a Zach Taylor press conference. I don't want to keep you waiting. Here's a part two of his comments from earlier today with the local Cincinnati sports media.
Coach, what's different with AJ Green over the past couple of weeks?
Nothing. You know, that's it's one of the. Yeah, it's a good question, James. I get where it's coming from, but for us, it's nothing. It's some of those games where he wasn't getting targets and getting those opportunities was really just the way that the coverage was falling or other guys, you know, were there in the progression. to where that never really affected us. And I know it's frustrating at times for receivers in general, not just AJ, when you're not targeted. It gets frustrating when you go a whole half or a whole game and the ball's not coming your way and you're running. But again, we knew, hey, just hang in there. It can be any receiver in any game can have those 10 catches for 100 yards. And I think it's come true for him those last 2 weeks. And again, he's tremendous. I mean, you guys know AJ better than I do even. And when you talk to him, you just got such a belief in him that that he's going to make plays for you and be there when it matters. And that's what he's done for us.
When you find guys that are open against the defense, against the linebackers, back end, whatever, in pass coverage, and I know the best pass defense is a pass rush, that's already been addressed, but when there are guys that are so open, is it a technique error, an assignment error, a combination of both?
It can be a little bit of everything, you know, and sometimes those routes you don't want them to develop as long as they develop, you know, where some of those openings come when you're playing zone coverage. And other times it is just it might be a pre-snap alignment. It might be a pre-snap being set, being ready to go, being ready to cover your man. Because there were some opportunities where maybe they should have been sacks or throwaways where they turned into big gains, you know, 20, 30-yard explosive gains where it's just a matter of, hey, let's get our feet set, get our eyes in the backfield, and get ready to go.
Zach, y'all, there's a chance that you could be without four of your five starting offensive linemen that you started week one with. Yeah. I mean, are there things schematically that you can do to help Joe when you have those kind of situations to make things maybe a little bit easier for him?
Yeah, and I think we believe in everybody we walk out on that field. Yesterday, it's those linemen kept dropping, and you hate it for them because those guys were working their tails off, and then they get hurt. But we had confidence in the guys we put right in there. Didn't miss a beat. We didn't change one play call because of the three guys that we had in there. I can promise you that. And so, again, those guys, they've been here. They've been getting a ton of reps. You know, you talk about Akeem, you talk about Billy, you talk about Fred. Those guys have gotten a ton of reps. And so they're ready when their number was called, and we've got confidence in those guys.
Coach, when you have a player like Carlos who has spoken out on social media and done some of those things, how much of that is you as a coach and the coaching staff handling it, and how much of that is the front office talking to you or vice versa in communication just throughout the organization about a specific player?
Yeah, we have tremendous communication every single day with personnel department, with ownership, and so we're always on the same page.
Zach, you've been a part of a staff in Miami that made big changes. I mean, you took over down there mid-season before. When stuff like that happens, what does that do to a team, to players? Are there actual benefits of coaching staff changes mid-season, or is it pretty much through your eyes when you went through it, one of the hardest things to try to acclimate to a new, you know, leader in a room?
I think every situation is different, you know, and it's hard to compare situations. I believe in our staff. And again, we're a play away from winning a game and getting that momentum, a stop away. Some of them are self-inflicted. But again, it takes everybody. It takes this whole coaching staff and every player in all three phases to take the pressure off each other. So every situation is different, and I've got confidence in the staff.
One more question.
Do you get the sense that this is eating at Lou? Is he a pretty even keel guy, or is this something that is really hard for him to deal with, knowing that you guys are as close as you are? And
it's hard for everybody. You know, when you watch the tape, it's hard because we're right there, and right there is not always good enough in any phase. We deal with that on offense, you know, all the time. And again, it takes everybody just sticking together. That's been the message, and that's going to continue to be the message.
All right, there you go. Zach Taylor's press conference. I think it was worth the wait.
Well worth the wait. Shout out also to Travis Kelce today on the Pat McAfee Show, rocking the Bearcat gear.
With the shark tooth hat, I saw. Yeah, that was kind of cool.
He shouted out the 08 win at West Virginia as well.
I remember that game well.
Yep.
Kazeem Ali. Travis's career trajectory has...
A little bit different
than Kazeem's. Hey, by the way, I got a tweet here. Jeff Bailey is here, so we're supposed to mention him.
Oh, Jeff.
Hey, Jeff. And we want to thank our server, Bambi.
Yes.
Who took... normally, we have a young lady by the name of Taryn, and we had to explain to Bambi who Wally Pipp was. Taryn has been Wally Pipped. We have to go.
It's a great end of the show.
It really is. Hey, the Mark Stoops Show is coming up next. You can talk about that game. Disaster of a Kentucky loss to Missouri. Now we're getting screamed at by other people. We have to go. Thanks so much for listening. This is ESPN 1530, Cincinnati Sports Station.